We figured it out. Well, Ray and Lindsay and Bill and Mary Ellen figured it out.
Teamwork.
So we're ready to start. Let's say a prayer. Lord, thanks for this beautiful day, this beautiful season. So much that's woven into it. Things that are beautiful, things that are hard. And we ask that you'd be with us as we worship you today. Amen.
Thanks, Pete. Go, Raymond.
Stripes we've made, for all our blessings, we've fallen far away from truth, turning our face away from this hurting race, we turned our face away. Fallen far away from truth, turning our face away from this hurting race, we turned our face away from you. We want to be your hands, your feet. Our words will let our actions speak. For every broken heart, for every widow, for those without shelter from the rain, we lift our eyes to you, looking for answers. We have been called to ease the pain. We want to be your hands, your feet. With our words, we'll let our actions speak. We want to be your hands, your feet. Without words, we'll let our actions speak. Here we are. Words can only go so far. Draw us closer to your heart. Bring us back to you. Back to you. Here we are. Words can only go so far. Draw us closer to your heart. Bring us back to you. We want to be your hands, your feet. With our words, we'll let our actions speak. We want to be your hands, your feet. With our words, we'll let our actions speak.
Sing together like this. It's a gift. And thank you for the ability we have as humans to hold so many things in tension when things are extremely difficult and when there's joy there too. And we, in a very complicated way, feel all the things all at once. Thank you that there's always light to be found and that we can find it in you and each other, in the beautiful world around us. Amen.
you so much. It's beautiful.
So, yeah, this was lovely. So thank you guys so much. And what a beautiful prayer about finding beauty and life, that it's always possible to do that. So it made me think, man, wouldn't it be great to become like seekers of the light, you know, looking for the glimmers of God or love or truth or beauty or justice or any good thing, you know, looking for those and celebrating them when we see them. So that's what I was thinking about. Quite a few things happened this week. Peter had a sad thing happen. His neighbor over on the Rushton Street housing is Wade. I don't know Wade's last name. Do you know? What's Wade's last name?
Bradford.
And Pete realized he hadn't seen him for a couple of days, and they sometimes watch TV together. So we went over, and the door was unlocked, and Wade had collapsed and had died inside the room. So that was a kind of a hard thing. And also, yeah, you've been really worried about your son Eric's baby.
Yeah, his liver was both gone.
Liver's very, very bad shape.
Yeah.
And then we've been talking all week with Mandy in Halifax, who's had a kidney transplant, and she has it hasn't been seamless. There's been some things that have been of great concern, but on the other hand, it seems like the kidney is waking up and starting to be used quite well. So all hope for this to take root in her body. And also Mariah's mom. You know, Hayden and Mariah have been out west in Kelowna with family and with Mariah's family, and then about two nights ago, Mariah's mom died. So there's a lot of things to hold in our heart. And there's also a crazy world, and last week we spoke quite a bit about the election and the period of instability. And we have the problem with the virus too. So let's just go into a bit of silence. And then maybe just anybody that would like to, just say whatever you would like prayer for, and then we can all think about that for a moment. For these folks we've mentioned. For families and loved ones too. For stability in the unstable world. For great success in the worldwide search to find a vaccine that will be effective and for it to be able to be dispensed throughout the world. Lord, hear our prayers. Hear our prayers for all good things to grow, and for the suppression and limitation of bad things. And we ask that you be with us in the midst of both joy and sorrow, and help us to seek the light and to find the light, to find glimmers where each day, wherever we are, in others and in things that are happening and in this beautiful world you've made. Thanks. And I think I should say, so we have Marta and Matthew have come from Ukraine to live in St. Stephen, and so welcome. And we live with Nancy at Nancy's house. So welcome, it's nice to have you here. And okay, so today we have a speaker who's come all the way from School Street. It's Jess. I'm actually speaking twice this afternoon for David Moore's churches in California. So yeah, I'd love a prayer if you think about that. I hope to do a good job.
Longing for the beautiful.
Yes.
Oh, that's neat. Wow. But I guess that Lindsay must have known that. Okay, so I'm going to talk this morning about longing for the beautiful. And hopefully as I do this, I'll share some relevant material on longing, on human longing and the longing of our hearts, and on the beautiful or the good or the divine. But last week, as already mentioned, Walter spoke about lament and courage and his experience of watching the U.S. election. And this has very much been on my mind as well, and I know has shaped a lot of the thoughts I've had coming into this. So I know that political talk on a Sunday morning can feel a little bit dangerous, but I also want to say how grateful I was that the election was acknowledged in a serious way. I was grateful because, as I said to Walter, one of the great disappointments of church life for me has been how easy it seems for our services to ignore what is happening in the world outside our doors. One reason I come to church is to figure out how to live well in the world. So if the church isn't able to talk about the world in which we live, it's not helping me very much. So one of the things Walter shared was how triggering it was to sit down and watch the election again, and it stirred up all those memories of what it was like to watch the results come in 4 years ago. And my experience was similar. I too remembered the incredible heartache that descended on me 4 years ago as the results came in. I remembered sitting in complete disbelief as I watched half of the American votes go to Donald Trump. The same Donald Trump who spewed racial slurs and showed public disdain for the disabled. The same Donald Trump who had built his campaign on the slogan, "Make America Great Again," a mantra that, for him and his followers, meant building a literal wall at the southern border, as if greatness would come through refusing to help refugees, through taking care of our own and ignoring the suffering of those around us. The same Donald Trump who we all heard gloating about his habitual abuse of women. This Donald Trump was elected 45th president of the United States, and 81% of the white evangelical vote, or 81% of white evangelicals voted for him. So I still have such a deep response within me when I say that. Watching Donald Trump win the presidency through the white evangelical vote felt personal to me, as it should. I am a white American woman who grew up in the evangelical church. This is not something I say very often, but it is true. When Trump was elected in 2016, it felt like my soul had been injured. My confession is that it has been hard throughout the last 4 years to trust in the good words of Martin Luther King, who said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. It's been hard because we've continued to see white supremacy and systemic racism exploding around us. And we've come to see how we've been complicit in these systems that oppress. We've lost elections, and we've lost churches we believed in. We've looked at each other in disbelief across sidewalks and sanctuaries, asking, is this the church that raised us? For some, it's felt like a betrayal. But as we saw last week when we were watching Van Jones, for others, it's been much more than a betrayal. For BIPOC people, for LGBTQ+ folks, for the disabled, for refugees and newcomers and those seeking asylum, for anyone who's experienced sexual assault, for women, it's been a threat to life itself. I am reminded of those words. I am reminded that those words, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice, were said at the height of a crisis. In the midst of disparity, those words were spoken into the darkness in utter recognition of the lack. And so this week, as I was reflecting on all of this, I found myself turning through David Moore's book again. His book, I know many are very familiar with it, Making America Great Again. Fairy tale, horror story, or dream come true, a challenge to the Christian community, was written in 2017, right after the first, right after Trump was elected. I have decided to read a little bit more than just this quote up here, but that is the part that stood out to me this week as I was looking through this. But I'm going to read a longer piece here. So under the heading, God is not in control, David writes this: whatever the revealed will of God is, we need to press our way into it. Small minds need control, and big hearts do not. If God were in control, the Adam and Eve story could only have gone well. There's no evidence in the Bible that God is in control, especially as it pertains to governments. If God were in control, then he would have micromanaged King Saul when he decided to ignore the Creator. If God were in control, he would have micromanaged King David when David brought down a plague on his own people. If God were in control, He would have micromanaged the many biblical kings who did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. When we have big hearts, we set ourselves up for disappointment, and God has the biggest heart of all. No control, perhaps lots of disappointment, but the disappointment is countered with hope. God is not arbitrary, doesn't play games. In the Bible, God changed the hearts of governments as people changed. It can happen. So, today, I want to talk about the longing, the ache for what is beautiful and good, and how the lack of that hurts us. I want to talk about how we can honor that longing, how we can listen to it and participate in it to make the world more beautiful and just and good. And first, I'm going to start with this poem by Mary Oliver. It's titled Lead. And so I invite you to look at these words with me and to think about them as I go, and then we're going to talk about them for a minute. So, Lead. Here is a story to break your heart. Are you willing? This winter, the loons came to our harbor and died one by one of nothing we could see. A friend told me of one on the shore that lifted its head and opened the elegant beak and cried out in the long, sweet savoring of its life, which, if you have heard it, you know is a sacred thing, and for which, if you have not heard it, you had better hurry to where they still sing. And believe me, tell no one just where that is. The next morning, this loon, speckled and iridescent, and with a plan to fly home to some hidden lake, was dead on the shore. I tell you this to break your heart, by which I mean only that it break open and never close again to the rest of the world. So I know what I hear when I read this poem, that I would love to hear you reflect on it in some way, what you see in here.
It reminds me of another poem by Padre Otuma, the His Task of Life.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Where he just goes through a task about all these things that are incredibly painful and difficult parts of the human experience. But then the refrain is, you might as well live, you might as well love, you might as well love. Because love and beauty, they're such precious things, but if we close ourselves off,
we don't get
to experience.
Can you say the refrain once more?
Something along the lines of, he says, you might as well live, you might as well love, you might as well love, you might as well love. He repeats that part. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Lorna is saying that that it is an invitation to not just be in our own world, but to see the world around us and to look at the pain and to let that break us open. Is that?
I agree with Lorna, but I also want to point out something that I don't see. And that's like, there's no finger pointing, there's no blaming. Like it's, you know, often sometimes we have this tendency, once something speaks to our heart, we want to like, but rather her approach is that invitation to break good things rather than say, and you know, there's a company just down the river that is actually, you know, poisoning the water, all that.
Right.
Instead of doing that, yeah. It's like trying to get straight to the heart instead of to the
yeah.
Oh,
that's really good. Thank you.
I think for me, I'm really touched by the last couple of lines. Because it's a beautiful picture of sorrow all through the poem, and to me it feels like it could be any sorrow, you know. And then, but the recognition that these sorrows are not without benefit. The sorrow itself can reshape our hearts and make us more human, make us more open to the world.
It's making me think, thank you for this reflection time, because it's making me think more, but it's almost like we're so used to, the default is that our heart shouldn't be broken open, but maybe the default is that it really should be, and that's the problem, or one of the problems is that our hearts should be open and broken. And when it's not, then I don't know, bad things happen.
Yeah. Looks good.
I got another thing. Well, and in my experience, when I built up a wall, you know, around my heart or parts of my heart, whatever, in that building of that wall, there's only pain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only pain. That makes me feel like I'm alone in this pain. But if those things break open, yes, there's pain, and you're acknowledging the other's pain, but in that, there's something beautiful, there's love, it's so complex, but it's so much more rich, and there is then like that beautiful quality to like real life.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you. Excellent. I love hearing from you. Thank you so much for sharing those things. When I looked at this, I had many of the same thoughts, not all of them. But I heard a question. The question was, are you willing to witness the things that will break your heart? Will you see who's dying around you? And will you look at how beautiful and precious and rare those things are? Are you willing for it to break your heart forever open? And thinking about this, and thinking about longing, brought me to consider some of the things that break my heart. So just before I finished high school, it's a long time ago, I took one last English elective simply because I adored my English teacher, Mr. Krupp. I managed to take one of Mr. Krupp's English classes every semester of my high school career. For those of you who know the Enneagram, this is raging type 6 behavior. The class he offered that term was African Lit. In this class, we read two books that changed my life. Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe, which is a novel that chronicles pre-colonial life in Nigeria and the arrival of Europeans during the late 19th century. This book introduced me to the very real dangers and harms of Christian evangelism. And at the time that I read this book, my one true desire was to become a missionary in Africa. The second book was The Color Purple by Alice Walker. In following the life of the main character, Celie, this book focuses on the plight of Black women in the southern states in the 1930s. It's brutal. Throughout the book, Celie is repeatedly harmed at the hands of men, and she writes it all down in her letters to God. Eventually, Celie meets Shug Avery, her own husband's mistress, and the two women form a deep bond. They fall in love. The first time I read The Color Purple, I experienced it. I am an empath, and in whatever way it happens, I entered Celie's story. The bond, the love that forms between Celie and Shug, was like the first glimmer of light after a long, dark hell. I was a young 18-year-old evangelical girl who loved the Bible, the church, and theology. And honestly, not a lot has changed. I was fervent. I had written journal entries to Mr. Krupp for 4 years. I am pretty sure in some of those journals I admitted a concern for his soul. He was an atheist, or at least that's what I understood him to be. I evangelized my teacher in my journals. If he judged me for it, he never let it show. So when I wrote a journal entry quoting The Color Purple in which I described the relationship between Celie and Shug, stating that I did not understand how a loving God could ever judge this love, he wrote back, "We should talk." And we did talk. And in the month that followed, I resigned as the president of my school's Bible club, admitting that I wasn't sure I believed in the Bible anymore. This was a very big deal at the time. I was having a moment. My lost faith was concerning to the people around me, but it was certainly most concerning to me. I was heading off to Bible school to become a missionary, and I had no plan B. But here's the thing. I had seen a truth I couldn't unsee, a truth I wouldn't unsee. I had looked lovingly at the pain in the world. I had let it in, and it broke my heart open. The truth that followed was that my God, the God given to me by the church I loved, was not nearly big or beautiful enough. Never doubt what a good book can do for someone. This experience helps me to understand the words of Eckhart, who said, "I pray God to rid me of God." To this day, I credit The Color Purple as the source of my first awakening, but what I mean by awakening is that The Color Purple put what I want to call a divine crack in the foundation my faith was built upon. Leonard Cohen's song, I think I have it.
There you go.
Thank you. Leonard Cohen's song Anthem repeats these words: "Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." So while I still went to Bible school and I still became a missionary, I now had a certain irreverence for the church. I had just a smidge of edge. Somewhere deep inside me, I knew I didn't agree with the church on some things. In fact, I couldn't agree. What saddens me now is that I spent so much time resisting this part of myself, or trying to overcome it. I was somewhat obsessively apologetic, something I'm still trying to overcome. And I often viewed my inability to fall in line as a symptom of my weak faith. I identified as a doubter, a skeptic, a person of little faith. And I couldn't see myself as a leader because I experienced my doubt as failure. So I searched desperately for people to follow. This is a bit dangerous, but the truth is I didn't follow everyone. And I've met wonderful people this way. Through some of them, I have learned that my faith has always been alive and well. The divine voice inside me was affirmed. That voice, thankfully, has been relentless with me, and she keeps saying the same thing, which is, that isn't good enough yet. It isn't good enough yet. I've been searching for a good God, a God worthy of the name God. So the doctrine of hell, eternal conscious torment, total depravity, white supremacy, the exclusion of LGBTQ plus folks, the oppression of women, an abusive God who kills his son to appease his own anger, none of this was good enough for the divine voice within me. That voice was calling out for more beauty, more compassion, more humility, more generosity, and more love. The early church philosophers of the 3rd and 4th centuries and even before understood God to be the good. I've loved learning this because it resonates with something deep inside me. The voice that says to me, that's not good enough yet, is deeply aligned with Christian orthodoxy. That voice is the truth inside me, and it comes from the deepest part of my own heart. My longing for the good is the good at work within me. So at this point in my life, all roads lead back to St. Macrina. Because I am studying her for my thesis work. She is a 4th century. I keep going wrong here. She is a 4th century Cappadocian church mother and theologian. And I think she was a genius. So, in her explanation of what she calls the soul's interior attachment to love, she explains that the soul is pulled toward that which is beautiful, because that which is beautiful, that which is love, is the true nature of the soul. She says that as the soul participates in this nature, the nature of God, it conforms to it, becoming beautiful through its participation in beauty. In this way, the soul returns to its original state. The soul returns to love. The thing I really want to emphasize today is that the soul longs for beauty because beauty is the true nature of the soul. And often that longing that we feel is an indication of what's lacking. So I just said the thing I want. What did I say? The thing I want to emphasize is that the soul longs for beauty because beauty is the true nature of the soul. And often that longing that we feel is an indication of what's lacking. So this week Vineyard Canada released their policy on sexuality and marriage. And which is, this is something they've been asked to do by the LGBTQ plus community in the Vineyard, who know how important it is for this to be made clear. However, reading it still broke my heart. I am longing for something different in the church, something better. And I've been longing for this for a very long time. And I know that many of you have too. Books have been written. So I just want to acknowledge the grief that our beloved Vineyard LGBTQ plus siblings are feeling right now. We see you. We're sorry. It's not good enough yet. And as much as I can, I bless and affirm. I bless and affirm the LGBTQ plus community, our beloved siblings, in the name of Jesus Christ. I just want there to be a different message, just something else, something more beautiful than these words that came out in this statement. So Rumi writes, God is pleased when your love realizes it is part of something oceanic and begins to move with the whole. This larger love is more real, being itself reality. And so that's it. Let's move with love. That's all I have.
So I have one deep feeling coming out of this talk. I don't know about you. My deep feeling is, I wish the people that I have to speak to this afternoon could hear you instead of me, but actually I'm speaking on some of the same ideas. I just think you nailed it. Thank you so much. It's beautiful. Okay, so we're gonna close with a couple of pieces of music.
Hello, okay, we're back. So Jess, Peter, your suspicion is correct. There were some chat texts and walks around the windy St. John Harbor and things of that nature to talk about a little bit of Jess's journey to what she talked about this morning. And in that, the other day she sent me this song, which is going to be familiar. We don't have words for this one, unfortunately, but I have a feeling you'll know the chorus at least. She asked me to learn it. So, since it's me and Raymond today, it is an incredibly stripped back version of the song that you know, but here we are.
Think about it, there must be higher love down in the heart or hidden in the stars above. Without it, life is a wasted time. Look inside your heart and I'll look inside mine. Things look so bad everywhere in this whole world. What is fair? We walk blind and try to see, falling behind in what could be. Bring me a higher love, bring me a higher love. Whoa. What's that higher love I keep thinking of? World's
I've been thinking about it all week, and so I said to him yesterday, could you do the thing? And he said yes. So yeah, this is there's still a lot of love by Martin with a Y, Joseph. Yeah, look him up, he's good.
Cracks the broken sky, and your kiss breaks my fall. It's never easy coming down to walk back the way we came, to understand what framed the day. Someone tell me there's nothing to be frightened of right now. There's still a lot of love. Still a lot of love. There's still a lot of love around here. There's still a lot of love. Still a lot of love. Still a lot of love. I've seen you with your head down. You've got your spirit on its knees, and you carry it so well. But you can't hang on forever, and at the end of that rope, my friend, there's a lot of good folk pulling for you right now. There's still a lot of love around here. Still a lot of love. Still a lot of love. Still a lot of love. There's still space to walk away. away, and you gave my heart a home. I'm lost without you now. Some things just get broken. Sometimes some things can't be fixed. And that's the way I gotta see it right now. When the light cracks the broken sky, and your kiss breaks my fall, it's never easy coming down. To walk back the way we came, we understand what framed the day. Come on, my love, there's nothing to be frightened of right now.
Thank you guys. Still one last thing to say, and that is that Tony and Matto are bringing in a trailer of fresh greens for anybody that would like them, and I think they're gonna bring them probably at about noon. We just got a message from Matto yesterday that they were gonna do this. So they're bringing in things from their property that they just thought might be encouraging and life-giving through this build up to Christmas season. So if anybody wants anything at all, they should arrive probably within the next 20 minutes, I'm guessing, and you're welcome to things for free. You know, it's just a gift. So, Jess, thanks so much. You have such a gift to say things. They go so deep in us. Thank you, and you guys too. Thank you. So I hope everyone has a wonderful week. Thank you.